Welcome back to the Art of Healing podcast, my friend. I am so excited to have you here today. We are talking about a topic that is deeply meaningful to me based on some of my past experiences. So some of you know that I lived in Reno, Nevada for a time. Well, before that, I was living in Hawaii with like 10 of my best friends. It was super awesome, super great, living like on the beach, you know. And then I moved to Reno, Nevada. I started working for Tesla and I lived by myself. I was working an incredible amount of hours. And it was just a really, really hard time. It was pretty lonely there. It was really difficult. But I remember that to keep myself motivated and focused when driving to work in particular, or sometimes in the evening when I was alone, I would listen to music that felt like it would be the type of music that would be in like the background of some sort of epic story, something that would be the background of, you know, some sort of hero with a sword, like run into the top of the hill and, you know, maybe flips his hair. Okay, I didn't imagine myself flipping my hair, but I did imagine myself kind of in what I would call my hero's journey. And then the difference between just any old story and a hero's journey is that it involves some sort of difficulty. It involves some sort of quest, but for a greater purpose. And heroes, they're not looking just to like get to basic functioning, but they want to accomplish that which is big for bigger reasons, to help the greater good, to help themselves to win the prize, whether that's knowledge for themselves, you know, save the town, save their relationship, save the person that they love. There's really meaningful reasons why they go out on their journey. And I remember I would think in this way, where I'd think about, okay, why am I doing this? What's my story? I used to think about all the guys I've looked up to in my life, people that I admire, and all of them have some sort of difficulty that they've gone through, something really hard, and they've accomplished something really great. And I would imagine, you know, as if I had a fast forward button, I'd fast forward in time. I'd say, what's the story that I'm going to tell my kids from what's happening right now? Like, how am I going to talk about what's happening right now in my life in the future? You know, maybe I'm driving my kids to go skiing, or maybe I'm driving to the beach, or maybe we're going to go work on something or serve somebody. And I think about those different examples because that's, you know, what my dad did with me. And man, I just got really grateful for my dad. Okay, maybe we need to do an episode on that. I am actually doing an episode on fathers coming up soon, so hang on to that. But if my dad's listening, I love my dad. I'm super grateful for him. And he has been an instrumental role, I think, in this hero journey of my own. I remember during that time and other hard times in my life, he would call me all the time and just encourage me. And I guess as part of it, I would imagine myself being a dad and telling my story. And if I want to tell a good story, I need to live a good story. You know, I wouldn't want to see myself in that time in Reno just being a victim of my own circumstances and, you know, just crying about it all the time. But which crying is fine. And you know, feeling the pain is great. But it's like, what do I want to do with that? What's the kind of story that I want to tell? Are there lessons that I learned from my difficult times? Those were the things I wanted to tell my kids. And so I would imagine all of that. And so in short, it's funny, I never called it this, but like I've been referencing now, is it was my hero's journey. And I would try to see it that way. And when I would see myself, not as just the victim of my own circumstances, but the hero, the main character in this epic journey, it would change everything. I would have much more happiness, much more motivation. I would be there in whatever circumstances I found myself in life for a real good reason. And so today, along that theme, I'm going to be talking with Ian Pratt. And you might know Ian on Instagram, and you might know him for his program called Hero Journey, or it's Hero's Journey. Ian, forgive me if I've said it wrong. I don't know if it's Heroes or Hero Journey. I think it's just Hero Journey. But I'm part of this program right now. I'm taking it as a participant. I'm not at this point doing any kind of teaching or instructing, but I am actually just participating in the program. And it's a phenomenal, phenomenal program. Ian has become a good friend of mine since this podcast. We consult regularly and I'm really grateful for this relationship, and I'm grateful to be able to share him with you. And so we're going to jump into this topic of hero journey. And hero journey is a program specifically designed for men. It's a kind of a men's only group. However, the principles that we're going to be talking about today are universally applicable. So ladies, hang in there. Don't bail. This is for you as well. It's just maybe you adopt it in a different type of way. So if you want to look up Ian and his program, I'm going to include all of his links to his information in the show notes here. I also follow him on Instagram. It's just IPRATT. Pratt, and then underscore hero journey is his hero journey account. So if you're curious about that program. Okay, without further ado, I'm going to jump into this conversation. Thank you again for being here and listening to the Art of Healing podcast. Ian, welcome to the podcast, man. It's really fun to get to know you.
Thanks, buddy. Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm excited for the conversation.
Yeah, I'm thrilled. I've been
lead
watching,
me, guide me. Where are we going?
I've been watching a little bit of what you've been putting out on Instagram and some of your work around the hero's journey. And yeah. I want to go into that. And this is kind of fun because I actually just had Connor Beaton, I think is how you say it, from Man Talks. He was just okay. on the podcast. It hasn't released yet. It'll probably happen like tomorrow. So we're kind of on this, you know, you're in the space of working with men. He's in the space of working with men. And it's cool because this month is kind of unintentionally on the Art of Healing podcast, turning into kind of like the month of the man. Like
dude learning. Therapy. Yeah,
dude therapy. So whether you are a man, obviously you're talking to the right guys. And whether you have a man in your life who you're interested in understanding his experience and how to support him and the nuances of what that means to essentially, you know, be a man within the relationship, I think we've got the right kind of guys talking to us today.
Yeah. And the cool thing about the hero's journey. So the hero's journey, I'm starting a company. It's actually launches. We're launching our pilot run through the program on Monday. And it's a course and a community for men. And it's called Hero Journey, but it's essentially a take off of the archetypical hero's journey, which is not a male exclusive paradigm. It's actually just right. the universal paradigm for growth and personal development. It's essentially it's a story structure, but it's a metaphor for personal growth and learning how to not only like grow as a person, but understand who you are. So it's really I think of it as like the fundamental pattern by which we change and which we most ideally optimally engage our lives. So yeah. For all the ladies listening, there's a lot to be had for everybody.
Yeah, I 100% agree. So most of the time, and I was talking with Connor a little bit about this recently, and I've been pondering on this a lot more, this idea of, you know, our own individual journeys, meaning us who show up here and like talk about mental health and relationships and all these things that you and I, before the podcast started, we said some people share their journey and some people don't share their journey. And I've been leaning into sharing it more vulnerably and explicitly. I just recorded a solo podcast where I shared some stuff that even like my in-laws don't even know about me, or like my cousins and some of my friends, because I feel like that journey is so important. And I'm curious, what led you to creating this program? You're like, the hero's journey. What is your journey look like to get to this point?
Yeah. Well, before I take that, I want to ask you what, how has it felt sharing your journey a little bit more?
Yeah, man, that's a great question. That's like such a therapist question. It's like, let me stop you and ask you how you feel about that. Perfect.
I mean, it is.
It is. It's like, beautiful.
Like, it's easy for us to think about what we're doing for the sake of other people, which like you wouldn't be doing what you're doing if you didn't care about helping people.
Yeah.
But I find, and I've been finding that through the process of developing and launching this thing, I'm like, oh, I feel myself growing and evolving in like really cool ways, opening up to new parts of myself. So yeah, I'm just curious.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because at this point, that more vulnerable aspect of my journey has not yet been aired, right? I just recorded it and it's still within my world. And so I don't know the full extent of what that's going to feel like to like, let that go out. But I do know that when I have gotten like vulnerable like that and let people see, you know, pieces of my journey and pieces that they might relate to, I find an increase in love, I think is the first like instinct that I felt when you said like, how does it feel? It's like, I just feel loving because usually people send you messages and they're like, Whoa, dude, like I get that. I feel that. I was there. Thank you. And you just feel love for that person. And it's different than just like, hey, here's three tips on how to, set boundaries. Like those are great and those are fine and useful, but they kind of just go out there and then they just kind of sizzle and you're like, okay, cool. Somebody probably picked that up. But
You're giving tools to people, which is cool, but when we are, I say we're narrative beasts, right? Like we connect through story. We process the world through story, and we connect with ideas best through story, and we connect with people best through story. I mean, there's crazy research that shows like if you tell a story, if you're running a nonprofit and you're trying to raise money, the most effective way, by far, statistically proven, is
Tell a
to tell
story.
the story of an individual, like one person, not two people, not a house full of people that you're helping, one person. That's how we're wired. We've evolved to connect that way best. So
And I think it
there's
comes
power
down to
there.
yeah, I think it comes down to that word like intimacy, like that just that one-on-one, it's just really powerful that those intimate moments. And it's almost like I kind of get that with, right now Instagram sits at like around 150,000 people, and it's sometimes it's like, gosh, I don't feel intimately connected to like any of you. And the second that you open up and you get vulnerable, you get a couple of those messages, or even you just imagine a person on the other side feeling something about it, and it's something about your life, not a principle from the universe of therapy that you just pulled out. Even just imagining it, that's a more intimate experience. Even if you don't know that person, I guess. So that's my long
Well, so let me
answer.
take that as a lead in back to your question that you posed to me. So my journey has been it's been pretty wild and amazing. I've had a really blessed career. I started as a filmmaker out of college, and I just kind of showed up places with a camera in my hand and met people, and that opened the doors to all kinds of experiences that I had no business having in my early 20s. So I spent, I think I in my in 1 year I filled up a passport, traveling all over the world doing documentaries and commercials, and I traveled the world in two very different ways, right? So I did the nonprofit route, where I went to some of the poorest places on earth, and I would, get in huts with people, and I would I did I would do documentary on like people that were rescuing girls out of the sex trade in Southeast Asia, and like I would go to places where it was super gnarly, and I did some crazy stuff in Ukraine back in the day with street kids. And so I've seen like life basically as bad and hard as it can get. And then at the same time, or round about the same time, I'm traveling the world with these corporate clients, going to luxury hotels and doing commercials, and like going to some of the most lavish luxurious places that you could possibly imagine, and meeting,
Man.
powerful and famous people. And so I had an incredible breadth of experiences from an early age, and I just started really noticing that my attention would always go away from whatever project I was working on to the people that I was working with. And I just would notice all these patterns that would repeat in the lives of the people that I was encountering. And there was patterns that I noticed that on the one hand led to, health and fulfillment and a well-lived life. And then there's these other patterns that lead to, depression and despair and regret and just all. Essentially, I'm looking at this and I'm going, wow, there's some very easily identifiable things that you can do, or ways that you can orient yourself that lead you in one of two directions, regardless of your circumstances, right? So these people in the hut that I'm hanging out with, that are their life by every imaginable metric is much worse than the people that are, on this yacht that I'm hanging out with from the outside. But these people are, their life is full of love and contentment, and these people are griping and angry and just dissatisfied and popping pills, and you know what I mean? So that really threw me. And so I mean, I grew up without a lot of money in my family, so I never came from the world of, I feel like I never had this veil over my eyes of this superficial interpretation of what the world was about. But when I had those two extremes juxtaposed in such a stark contrast, it was really clear to me, I don't care about the stuff that most people care about. I don't need I don't need to have the nicest stuff, and I don't need the affirmation of other people. I want to have a life that feels good on the inside. Mm. And so what are the patterns that I can identify and implement in my own life that will lead to that type of life? And so I've spent essentially my entire adult life learning as much as I can from as many people that I can, that in a wide variety of contexts, what it is that leads to a good life. And I put this program together to just kind of share that. I have two sons, soon to be three. And I've always known that I wanted to do was be a dad and teach my kids about the world. And so as my wife and I were getting ready to have babies, I just was getting so excited about passing along everything that I've thought of and that I've learned and kind of collected along the way. And so, I kind of put it all into this course. And I can tell you, you know, more about various parts of my career that have kind of led into this moment that feels really synergistic, but that's basically what it is, man.
Oh, I love that. I love that. You know, what an interesting experience having the contrast of the most destitute conditions, like financially and all of that, versus the most wealthy and extreme. And then you would think that, okay, someone would walk in and, you know, see these two guys, who's rich, who's poor? Well, it's pretty easy to say like, oh, that guy's rich, the one with the yacht. But you're saying like, no, I'd argue that sometimes. It's like, that guy over there, you know, with the leather sandals and the dirt floor, he's way more wealthy, but in a different way than the other guy.
Well, yeah, if you're talking about financial wealth, but financial wealth is surface level, you know, financial wealth is good. Like, it's nice to not live in poverty. Living in poverty is really, really tough. And I've seen it firsthand. It's not pleasant. And I'm not trying to downplay, you know, the pain and misery that comes along with those circumstances. But I think that the thing that we in the West often do is we exchange value for comfort, right? We make decisions based on what is comfortable, and how do we add more and more comfort to our life? There's this line in a book called The Prophet by I don't know how to pronounce his name, but it's Khalil Gibran or Gibran, and it's this beautiful, beautiful book. If you haven't read it, check it out. It's essentially like a bunch of little like mini sermons that are like a page or two long, and they're very poetic. But there's a line in there that says, comfort enters your house as a guest and then becomes a host and then becomes your master. And I read that and it just rocked my world. And I was like, I was looking around at my life at all these things that I had replaced value with comfort. And I'm like, a really good example is like, I have two little boys. I'm probably just finished sweating because right before I jumped onto this, we were running around on a treasure hunt in our backyard. We have an acre. We're just outside of Nashville, and my oldest is three, about to be four, and my other kid is two. And so while they were taking a nap, I drew a treasure map, and we have this little creek that cuts through our property, and then there's some trees back there. And so I got all my like muddy boots on and went out and buried this treasure box out in the creek. And then when they woke up, there was like a treasure map waiting, and we went on this treasure hunt. And it's like, those are the things that are so meaningful for them, but also for me. Like, I'm connecting with my life in a really real and beautiful way. And that is value. That's not comfort. Like, comfort would be, I'm just going to sit here and like scroll on Instagram or watch Netflix or, you know, whatever that comfort is for you. And that's one of the big things that I've realized is like, if you can make decisions based on value and whatever that value is to you rather than on comfort, and don't make comfort your value. That's what that's the trick. You can't say like, oh, I really value having a yacht. You're like, okay, cool, but what is that yacht going to actually do for you on like a spiritual level? So
And it's and this is something that I was actually processing through with a client of mine recently, talking about this concept of trading kind of long-term value. And I feel like value exists and perpetuates into the long term. It can be like immediately accessible, but it also is a more enduring kind of principle, and comfort is oftentimes fleeting and it has much more of a limit to it. Value is in ways kind of unlimited, where it's not strictly contingent upon your circumstances. And, you know, and I think that that's an important concept too, is thinking, you know, I think about this empathy gap that we have between our current self and our future self. It's like, we don't care about our future self. Sometimes we'll set goals that are like ridiculous and like going to tear us apart and we're going to hate our life, but we're like, yeah, I'm going to set that goal. And your future self is like screaming, going, dude, don't do that. Or, you know, we don't do something that maybe would be helpful. Like, let's say have a difficult conversation, like confront somebody about the way that they hurt you, because you know, you don't want to hold on to resentment. And, but your current self's like, you know what, I'll just kind of bury it. I'm not going to say anything. And your future self's going, dude, I'm not okay with that. I'm going to have so much resentment. This is going to be bad. But we don't think about ourselves in that way. And it's kind of an interesting concept when we think about this kind of comfort value dynamic.
Yeah. And another part of that is like, and what I hear from you and it, how it lines up with what I'm saying is kind of like, don't make decisions based on external motivators, right? It's like how other people are going to think of me, or how, you know, I don't want to have this conflict with that person.
Yeah.
Because that, like, that external conflict. So I'm going to accept the internal conflict. And that's I think that's another way to look at the value thing, is like, when I'm talking about value, I'm talking about identifying for yourself, like, what are the things that actually matter most to you? What do you believe in? Who are you? Like, what, like, on a spiritual, like on a core level, what are the things that actually make life meaningful? And how do you start making decisions in that direction, rather than based on what other people are going to think of you, or what external conflict I'm going to have to face to achieve those values? And that's essentially at the core of what the hero's journey is about, right? Like, the hero's journey is a call to the adventure, to adventure, a call to step out into the unknown and to find yourself in the struggle, right? Mm-hmm. So, and that's why I think comfort is a terrible master, because comfort keeps you where you are. Comfort keeps you in place. And as you can probably identify through your own life, some of the things that have been the times that have been the hardest, that have demanded the most of you, turn out to be the most valuable experiences you've ever had.
Absolutely.
And have made you who you are today.
Absolutely.
And so that's essentially that's why I love the framework of the hero's journey, is because it is the fundamental way by which we as humans grow. You're in a place, right? And so I said, like, imagine that your life is here. This is where you are, and this is where you could be. You don't ever just go on a straight line from here to here. That's not how growth works. That's not how life happens. Like, it happens through a series of spirals, and it's these cycles that repeat. And that cycle is the hero's journey. You step out into the unknown, right? And the unknown, like, where you are right now, you're limited. You have very real limitations. There's a lot that you don't know. There's a lot you haven't experienced. There's a lot of tools and mindsets that you haven't developed yet. So you step out into that unknown, and you confront real obstacles, right? Yeah. And then in facing those obstacles, you are forced to grow and evolve and learn new skills and learn new mindsets. And then there's a death of that old limited version of you, and a rebirth into a new, more empowered, more fulfilled, more wise, more, you know, more powerful, whatever, stronger version.
Yeah.
And then that cycle just continues. And that's how I think, that's like, if you can get that image in your mind of kind of this uphill spiral to your future self, you know, you said your future self is screaming at you. Well, don't, you know, step into the pain, but don't do it from a place of being motivated by external factors. Do it from a place of responding to the call that's like inside of you. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I love the visual of the, you know, increasing spiral, being that it's not linear, that there's parts of it that are down, you know, on a downward trend. You feel like you're spiraling at times during that. And even just having this concept in mind as you, I guess, start out on your hero's journey, if you're saying, like, I'm intentionally moving towards the stuff that, you know, Ian and Trevor are talking about, I like that, I'm going to adopt this in whatever way it looks like in my life, or they, you know, jump in on your program or whatever, there's good research in the field of motivation that talks about people have a higher endurance for pain and difficult tasks. They have more motivation, in a sense, on like an enduring scale, if they plan for the discomfort. And it sounds so simple, but they took a group of people and they had them do a similar task or the same task. One was just, okay, this is what you need to do. The other one, they consciously planned with them. Okay, you're going to be uncomfortable at this point. And how are you going to feel about it? What are you going to think about it? You know, how in a way is that discomfort even welcomed? Like, that's the next level. It's not just planning for it, but it's welcoming it and seeing it as a positive thing in life, such as
so good.
How we're framing it, right? Like, oh yeah, discomfort equals growth, so I'm totally cool with it.
Yeah.
That's going to increase.
I think one layer deeper than that is like the story that you tell yourself about yourself in the world and your role in the world defines your experience, right?
Oh, for
sure.
So
what you're saying is like, if you tell yourself a story that the world is going to have obstacles, but facing them is going to be valuable for you, that's a really good step. But I would say adding one layer deeper is also tell yourself the story that you are the type of person that is capable to confront those things and come out the other side better off for it, right? And so I think that there's an identity piece that I don't hear a ton of people talking about, and maybe I'm not in the world. I'm definitely not in the world that you're in. I kind of dip my toes into it. But our mutual friend Matthias will always like, we'll be talking about something and he'll be like, yeah, you're talking about like all of this stuff, even though you haven't, like you're so ignorant about any, like the vast like stockpile of literature that can, he's always telling me you should go get your counseling license or whatever. I'm like, that's awesome for you. Maybe someday I'll do that. But I think the identity thing is a piece, that is crucial to this. So I'll give you an example to this. I have a bunch of buddies who are, just because of the age that I'm at, who are having kids for the first time right now.
Yeah.
And I, like I said, I have two, I'm about to have three, three under five, which is going to be fun. Soon to be three under four. So I have these guys that are asking me like, what's your like biggest advice for me as a first time dad? And without fail, I tell them essentially the same thing. I kind of tailor it to, you know, what I know about that guy. But the basic premise of it is, decide right now that you're going to be the guy who does X, Y, and Z. So for example, decide now that you're going to be the guy who gets up in the middle of the night to help feed or change diapers or, you know, whatever it is, you're going to be the guy that puts your wife's and your kids' needs above your own for this season, because ultimately you don't really matter that much in the early months. Like you can't produce milk. You're not, there's all you can really do is just like support mom, change some diapers, you know, give some bottles or whatever. But if you give yourself that identity, come 3 a.m., 4 a.m., when it's like the sixth time that you've been awoken and you're so exhausted and you have an important event the next day, if you're not being driven by an internal identity, then you're much more likely to be frustrated and to feel like personally slighted. You know what I mean? Like,
how could
this child do this to me right now? doesn't this baby know that I have an important meeting tomorrow?
Right.
But if you can actually take on the identity of the guy who does that, and then one layer deeper than that is the guy that has joy in doing that.
Yeah.
And I think that's a big thing for me, is like, I've learned to give myself identities that are based on positive impact and redemption in my life and in the lives of my family and my community, and then find joy in those. And that has flipped the switch. That's flipped the script, rather.
Yeah.
In a massive way, where before, when I was in a season of really feeling like a victim for a variety of reasons that, you know, we can get into if this conversation goes that way.
Yeah.
I spent a bunch of years feeling like this victim of the circumstances that happened to me. And I, at the time, was in this position, in Portland, where I was leading this community of people, and I was serving. And it always felt like I had so much, I was fighting off resentment, right? I was trying to not be resentful, because I started this whole thing because I love people and I wanted to serve. And then because of my mindset, that was this kind of victim mentality, it was really hard to not start to get resentful of people and feel taken advantage of, instead of being like, you know what, I get to serve my community in this way, and I get to be the guy that like creates these incredible experiences and memories and space for these people.
I think we're kind of bridging all of the things we're talking about in this context of like identity, value, comfort, and all of that, where a lot of, as you say, things about identity and kind of deciding that you are a particular type of person, type of guy, I think about the work that I do with, around core values. Like, and sometimes it's helpful to, you know, a lot of times a therapist's job is just to organize a person's experience where they're like, yeah, I like feel these certain ways. It's like, cool, let's name those and make them really concrete for you. It's like, oh, this is my value. Like, I value my family, maybe for that guy who has a new baby. I value, you know, raising kiddos to be successful. Like, it's just something deep, something that really matters to them, and aligning that. It's funny, the values conversation, the identity conversation, they're almost one and the same. If you have a deep value around something, you kind of form your identity around those things. And I think we get into trouble when we start trying to form our identity around comfort, right? Comfort values. My identity is in my cool watch and my, you know, Tempur-Pedic bed,
or your personality.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's like those things.
Well, people don't understand. Maybe you can talk a little bit about that, because you probably know a lot more about this, you know, from a social science perspective than I do. But like, we are not our personalities, right? And so many of us identify ourselves. We think about ourselves as our personalities. Mm. And that's actually not a good way to think about yourself. Your personality is a thing that you kind of put on over and. And I don't want to go too deep into this if that's not something that you want to talk about, but maybe, I don't know, is that like stirring up anything that you want to share?
Well, tell me a little bit more about where you come from, where you say like personality how did you say it? It's like not a
helpful
way of identifying.
So I think that like I heard this from a buddy of mine who said like we all have personalities that we've put on around this like internal wound that we have. Mm-hmm. And so we've developed these personalities as kind of like a coping mechanism to deal with shielding that wound from the world. And so that's a big part of the process of like self-discovery, is learning what are the parts of my personality, my identity that I've built up around a wound that actually have almost nothing to do with me. They're actually, and that wound doesn't really have anything to do with me either. It's something that happened to me. It's something that I'm carrying that I don't have to carry.
Yeah.
And I can put that wound down, and then I can watch those parts of the personality, like those disingenuous parts of myself that I've put on. I can set those aside. Right.
Yeah. I love this. I feel like in some cases it can kind of be mixed, because for a person who I guess is, and this is way too big of a term, but like a bit more self-actualized, they've healed those wounds, they know their value, they know which direction they want to go in life, and they align with it in a very conscious way, their personality can really be a direct expression of who they actually are. Who they are is the core set of values, the way they feel about the world, and they intentionally live there kind of on a deep way, and the personality is an expression of that. And they're like, hey, I'm congruent. What I want to be and what I express, or like who I am and what I express, they're essentially the same thing. And so for some people, I feel like you can get a sense of who a person is based on that expression. But I think what came to my mind when you were describing the wound and the word personality in particular, it makes me think about personality disorders. You know, we call it a personality disorder, and it's like, what does that actually mean? And most personality disorders, if we look in like the diagnostic manual of diagnosing, this is basically for anybody who's listening, is the DSM-5. It's this big book where all the diagnoses for mental health exist, and whether you believe in using it or not, that's not the debate here. But what it does is it outlines certain disorders that are called personality disorders. You have things like narcissism, you have the antisocial, you have the borderline personality disorder. And in all of those cases, I can't think of a personality disorder that doesn't have wounding at its core and an attempt to cover up or compensate for that wounding. Let's take borderline for example. A lot of times borderline exists, usually narcissism exists in males, typically borderline in females, but it can be other ways. But we'll use the female example for borderline. A child who is wounded by their mother, not primarily moms usually. And it's not like, you know, physical wounds. Sometimes it can be. Sometimes it could be just shaming around their decisions or who they are. And they grow up with this insecure self, this insecure view of love and closeness. And
when the wounding can be just as much from what you don't receive as much as what you do receive, right?
Easily. Yeah. So yeah, they grow up trying to compensate for that wound by manipulating others, you know, erratic behavior, being a victim in all of their relationships, things like that. So I love what you say about wounding and personality.
Well, I don't think that you have to push it quite so far to the personality disorder thing. I think think in your life about people that you spend time with and you walk away feeling like, I don't feel like I actually interacted with a true person. I felt like I interacted with somebody who is trying to be funny to be liked, right? Mm-hmm. Like they, at some point in their life, received a message that they don't have value. And so the way that they cope with that is they're the loud person that makes everybody laugh.
Yeah.
But you can tell, I mean, we're highly intuitive people, right?
Yeah.
Most of us are. And so you spend time with a person like that and you know that there's something that's incongruous there.
Right.
There's not an integrated, that their loudness and their humor and their antics are not coming from an integrated place. Then you can spend time with somebody who's truly funny and maybe they're just as loud and just as, they're just dominating the conversation just as much, but you leave and you go like, that person like is so fun to be around.
Right.
Right. And it's because there's a sense of integration and like internal peace and freedom that is just like that freedom actually gives you freedom to feel like you can step into who you truly are. And
for
that's something that I'm like, I spend a lot of time thinking about that. Like, what are the things that I'm putting on, that are just coping mechanisms to deal with my insecurities?
Yeah.
And how do I step away from those? How do I put down those false identities and keep coming back to my true identity?
Yeah, I love that. And I like how we're bringing it back to this idea that this is a big spectrum, right? I kind of mentioned maybe the extreme spectrum on the personality disorder. Then there's also just the, maybe a lot of people are listening who are, people that listen tend to be a little bit more educated on certain terms, such as like, let's say you identify in the anxiously attached category, I overcompensate in relationships, just like you were describing.
Yeah.
What I love about what you said is that there's also an underlying hopeful tone in this that says you are not that is an expression or a way that you're dealing with something. It's your strategy. It's not your identity. And if you can realize that, you go, whoa, holy cow, you mean I can be different? Like, if I can go down there, heal that stuff, if I can establish my own identity and intentionally do that, then I don't have to be that guy anymore. I don't have to be that girl anymore. That's pretty hopeful.
Well, and that's the power of the Jungian idea of the shadow, right? It's like, there's a lot of stuff that if you're not familiar with that, the shadow is, I know you are, but for listeners, the shadow is essentially the parts of yourself that you've repressed because you think that they're socially unacceptable. And that can look like a lot of different things for a lot of different people. And there's a lot of people that have kind of taken the shadow in different directions, but I think that's my basic understanding of what the shadow is. So as an example, a lot of people in our society are oriented towards people pleasing. They're highly agreeable, and they've been conditioned to repress their own opinion to a degree that they don't even know what their opinion is, right?
Yeah.
And so the beauty of shadow work is that, so if you're thinking about it through the paradigm of the hero's journey, right? You're on this journey, you're facing obstacles and challenges so that you can evolve and grow and then slay the dragon and then get the gold and bring that gold back to your community. It's not just a journey of transformation for yourself, but it's also an ultimately like redemptive journey for the community and for the world at large. But if you're doing that shadow work, you actually end up finding that the strengths that I need to overcome the obstacles in front of me are often buried in the shadow. Right. Mm-hmm. And so that's where, like, I grew up in the church. And so there was a lot of, there wasn't a sophisticated understanding of this topic. Mm-hmm. So it was a lot of just like, put all that stuff behind you. You're like a new creation now, like put all that stuff behind you.
Right.
And you're like, yes, but also there's a lot of stuff that I buried in my shadow because I was I was, you know, I grew up in this very specific, you know, religious subset that was very dogmatic. And so I, most of my opinions and my identity is actually buried. I'm like an iceberg at this point. There's like a very little piece of me that's above the surface. And that part of me that's above the surface is essentially just like the dogma, right? Like the dogma that actually has nothing to do with me. Right. And so like, that's the work that I, that's the journey that I've gone on through my adulthood is like, first of all, letting go of all the dogma and then starting to like dig down in and unearth like, okay, let's actually confront the stuff that is pretty gnarly down here and get like familiar with it and understand like, oh, I am completely capable of being, you know, a pretty gnarly dude, but I'm going to integrate that in a way that like I have it under control. And then I'm going to also take, I'm going to take the power and the strength that I find down there and start implementing it in helpful and healthy, helpful ways in my life.
Yeah. What did, so I'm almost hearing kind of echoes of your own story. Like this kind of happened for you. Like there was either an event, some events, like how did you go about doing that? Cause I know from what I gather, you still hold on to core elements of like faith and, you know, things like that. They're very important to you as, you know, it was same in my life. And then also the integration of these new things, you know, going deeper into that iceberg. What happened? How did you do that? I guess start to explore down that iceberg without, you know, because some people can explore down that iceberg, especially if they come from like a religious context, and then they get really like resentful and angry.
Deconstruct out of anger and resentment.
And they just like push away a lot of things that potentially were like very valuable to them instead of maybe allowing them both to live at the same time. I guess what was going on for you that allowed you to go down that iceberg? Maybe, I guess it's a broad question. I'm kind of just trying to poke around into that story.
I've always been oriented towards trying to grow and evolve, like to be a better version of myself. That's just how I'm wired. Like I would assume that your listeners will probably resonate with that because you don't really listen to therapy podcasts or like, you know, the type of podcast that you're doing right now, unless you're oriented in the direction of wanting to grow and evolve towards a more like realized place. And so I think, I left my parents' home when I was 17 and I went to school and I spent a long time just kind of distancing myself from my family, not in like my family is amazing. And I didn't have, you know, I wasn't in an abusive home or anything like that. So my journey, you know, if you come from that background, that's a completely different story. And I'm not saying anything about that story in sharing mine, but I still had to, because I grew up in such a dogmatic community and also home, where I wasn't really allowed to like, truly what I felt like I wasn't really allowed to be myself. I had to put on this persona of this like good, well-behaved boy who wasn't loud and was always respectful. And, and I think my journey looked like moving away from that and like kind of being resentful of that.
Yeah.
But then pretty quickly realizing, oh, there's a lot of good in that. And I don't want to throw away the baby with the bathwater. Like I learned how to be socially acceptable. I learned how to like enter a room and read people's needs and connect with them on an empathetic level. I learned how to be selfless. I learned how to be sacrificial and how to serve people really well.
Yeah.
And if I'm going to throw all of that away, I'm starting from ground zero. And I have a lot of friends who have done that. And then you spend, you know, when Moses took the Israelites out into the desert and left Egypt, they spent 40 years out in the desert. You know what I mean? Like you can spend a lot of time out in the desert trying to figure out, okay, now what, right?
Yeah.
Like when you leave tyranny, you go out into the desert and then you're like, okay, where do I go? And so you can spend a lot of time there. And I realized like, okay, I don't want to spend the next decade of my life in deconstruction and resentment. So how do I hold on to the good stuff and then like let go of the other stuff? And then how do I start to let go of not only the stuff that was done, you know, to me, but also the stuff that I've put on that is not truly me? How do I let go of that stuff?
Yeah.
And how do I actually start to, I just want to show up in the world. Like I want to actually live my life. Right. And I had a couple friends pass away in college in like crazy, surprising ways. And I was just like, man, I'm not guaranteed to be here next semester. And, you know, I don't want to spend my life not living. And so how do I get there quick? And so I'm really interested in like finding the shortcut through a lot of the stuff by talking to people like yourself who have a lot of wisdom that I don't have yet, by listening to amazing, you know, podcasts and then kind of integrating that stuff. Also just by going out and like experiencing life, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
I don't know if that answered your question at all.
And you know what? All of it's good. I think it does. I see something that is a bit concerning at times in like this world of therapy and where people do come from more of a structured religious kind of background, and they do throw out the baby with the bathwater and they get really resentful. And it's like, you know, sometimes they wind up talking about faith and like their church or whatever that they used to be part of more than the actual members do, or the people who still believe in it.
And it's just, they think about it more than the people who are actually still living in it.
Yeah. It's like, man, you are in the desert, man. Like you are just really, really resentful.
And I think that there's a part of growth, of the journey towards growth, that is necessary to look around and analyze, you know, your environment, analyze where you've been and, you know, what has happened to you and around you. And if you don't know who you are and what story you're in, then how are you expected to move forward intentionally? Yeah. Right. So there's a necessity in that, but I agree with you. I think that when I listen to a lot of modern therapy stuff, it's like, do you people actually want to get better, or do you want to be a victim? Want an excuse to wounded? Because if you're looking for an excuse to be wounded, then brother, there's an infinite amount of things out there that are going to let you, you know, there's an infinite amount of ways that you can be that way for the rest of your life, and you will never be healed. You'll never be better.
Yeah.
And if you're listening to this and that's where you're at, then I'm just going to tell you, hey, there's life on the other side of that. You know, you can find freedom. You don't need to be wounded forever.
And it's way, way better. Like, it's just so much better. This is the only way to actually finding relief. Even if like you truly are wounded, like it's not to say that there aren't actual moments of being victimized in some way, but if you stay there, then you are the victim, not only of that person, that perpetrator, whatever has happened, but you would then become a victim of your own thoughts, of your own self.
Yeah.
And it's like, dang, that compounding is not going to work.
Yeah. Well, it's you don't have to do much reading of the 20th century to realize that there were some really nasty stuff that happened to a lot of people.
For sure.
And there were people that went through those atrocities and came out the other side still joyful and not holding on to resentment. And so if, you know, a survivor of the gulag or of, you know, a Nazi prison camp can find grace and forgiveness and, you know, let go of resentment, that I'm pretty sure you can too.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It makes me think, I don't know my resource on here, so I don't know if this is true, but I was watching this video where they're talking about this narrative of, and whether it's true or not, I think the principle is really impactful, where they had this study where they put these kind of like scarring looking marks on these women's faces, and they'd have them go in for these job interviews, and just and they would show them in the mirror, like, yeah, you got some scarring looking stuff, you know, some makeup or whatnot. And then right before they'd go in, they'd remove the mirror and say, oh, actually, let's touch this up a little. And in some way, they like remove the scarring. So it wasn't actually there, but the participant thought that it was. They sit down in the room. And again, if anybody's like, oh, you got this wrong. Well, yeah, because I watched like a 4-second TikTok on it. I thought it was cool. But the principle is what I like. They walked in and, you know, afterwards, they're like, did you experience like, what was that like? And there's just tons of narratives about like, oh, so oppressed by it because of my scarring, or I was treated differently.
Yeah, I was so self-conscious. Yeah.
Yeah. Like just all this, like the interviewer was rude to me or all
they
this.
They wouldn't stop looking at it. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm like, well, actually you didn't even have scars. And you know, whether that's true or not, I think that the principle is absolutely true. If we believe that we're a victim, we are going to find victimhood. And the hard part about being truly a victim is that you do not have power. You do not. And so
that's what I said earlier. I said, you know, the story that you tell yourself about yourself and about the world and your role in the world your relationship to the world, whatever story you tell yourself, that will be true for you.
Yeah.
So if you tell yourself a story in which you're a victim and everyone is out to get you, and the world is small and not full of opportunity, and you're all alone, that will be your reality.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the message that I love sharing, especially with Hero Journey, is like, what we're doing essentially with this course is we're starting new patterns, new narrative patterns. We're telling new stories. We're stepping into new roles. What is this? What if you told yourself a story about an abundant world with an abundant God, you know, if you believe in God, or, you know, an abundant universe, if that is more comfortable for you, where you have power to face the things in your life and you can collect wisdom and tools and resources. You will be able to find accomplices along the way that will help you, that you can lean on, and you'll be able to find victory. And that, you know, it's the Christian idea of like, if you ask, it will be given to you, and if you knock, the door will be open to you. And I think that is a really beautiful poetic metaphor for this mindset, that if you engage the world through the lens of this story, that life is full of potential, and that I can step into it and find healing, not only for myself, but I can bring healing to the people around me, and I can actually be a catalyst to change in the people that have even wounded me. You know, I'm not going to tell anybody that's been abused, like, go try to, like, you know, be a blessing to your abuser. That's not what I'm saying. But like, if you find yourself in a situation where you can actually bring healing and redemption to people that have even wronged you in the past, how much better of a story is that? And I think that as I look around the world, that's the thing that I'm like really passionate about, is like, I look around the world and I'm just like, man, you people are telling yourselves really bad stories, and it's not serving you well.
Yeah.
Tell yourself a better story and then step into it. And like you already identified, expect that it's going to be difficult. Like it's going to demand everything of you, but the gold is on the other side of the struggle.
Yes, absolutely. It's like, what is life if you're not doing these things? It's funny, as you describe it, I think about comfort and value again, and I go, a lot of this is uncomfortable, but without it, there is not a lot of value. There's not a lot of purpose in just living. Like, I think about, wow, what a hero's journey to redeem those who even have persecuted you or hurt you, you know, and whether you believe in, you know, Jesus Christ or other things like that. I think that's one of the reasons why that story resonates with people all over the world.
I mean,
he is
the ultimate archetype of the hero, right? Like, his hero's journey is as archetypical as it can get.
Yeah.
You know,
absolutely.
And if you're not comfortable with the Jesus story, like, I'll give you another one. I was in Iraq a number of years ago, up in Kurdistan, up in the mountains, at the border of, you know, Iraq and Turkey.
Yeah.
And the people there, these Kurdish people, they have been oppressed by essentially everybody. They've been oppressed by the rest of the, you know, the ethnic Iraq people.
Right.
They've been oppressed by the people in Turkey. They've been oppressed by everybody. And when I say oppressed, like, I'm talking about like missiles dropped on their villages and like raiding parties coming in and killing their brothers and sisters and wives and stuff. And then while I was there, what I was doing, I was making a documentary of how they had welcomed a lot of these people who had been, you know, the Yazidis or whoever was there that had been an oppressor to them in the past. They welcomed them in and were like building camps for them. Ugh. And, you know, there was this one guy that was saying, he had a line that was like, you know, we don't have much kerosene and we don't really have enough food for our families and we don't really have enough clothes, but like, we're finding ways to share it. And what we have, like, we're sharing with them. And then you would go into these camps with these people who like are completely transformed, have had their perspective completely transformed about the Kurdish people. They're like, oh, everything that we were told was these are dogs and they're, you know, like they're not good. And so we should, you know, righteously afflict them, you know?
Right.
And so but then they're confronted with these people who are actually opening their arms with love and giving of the very limited resources that they have from a place of fullness. Right.
Yeah.
and they're not being forced into it. And that was, I mean, that was massively transformational for the communities that were there. And then for me, as you know, a dude in my 20s, to be able to go experience that, I'm like, oh yeah, life is a lot more beautiful and complex, and there are invitations into a better story everywhere. We just have to be willing to step into them.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Yeah. Well, I think this is a good and powerful place for us to call it a day on the podcast. I wish we had more time. It's so fun to chat. I think we could go on for a long time, and maybe we'll have to have you back and have another conversation. Where, you know, if for those who want to find you, where do they go?
Yeah, head over to herojourney.io.
Okay.
And then my Instagram is at iPratt, I-P-R-A-T-T. Hero Journey is we're kicking off on Monday, January 30th. So I'm assuming this episode will have aired after that. But we're going to do, essentially, I'm running this as like a very in-depth program with a small group of guys for this first iteration of it. And then my plan is to kind of take all the learnings from this run through and then kind of reform the content and refilm everything and then put it out as a product that's available for that, you know, it's available a lot cheaper. But then also my wife and I are talking about doing a hero journey that's just kind of not oriented specifically for men. That's just like a resource for couples or for individuals. So stay posted on there. There's a lot more fun stuff. We're going to have some workshops and retreats coming up this year as well.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, thank you so much for being here. I think people will be very blessed to have listened to this podcast. Thank you again.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me back. If you do have me back, I want to hear more about your story, because the little that I saw online was really, really impactful. And that's why I was excited when you reached out to come on here. I was like, oh man, I want to hear more of this story. And then, you know, I talked the whole time.
I love it.
So
I love
thank
it.
You. I just, on behalf of your listeners, I just want to also say thank you for, you know, stepping into that vulnerable space of sharing more of your story. I know you said you haven't released it yet, but I'm confident that, that people will be really, really blessed by that story. And, I'm excited to see where it goes.
Thank you so much.